This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. For years, big data has been the next big thing in tech. Businesses have been collecting a colossal amount of information on us as we surf the web, use our credit and debit cards, those customer loyalty cards, answer surveys, post on Facebook, and on and on and on. So there's this galaxy of information that we call big data. Has it lived up to its hype? Well, no, not exactly. And the reason for that is that there is so much information coming in every millisecond that we just can't get our arms around it. We can't make sense of it. For that, we need talent. We need people, at least for the moment. And there is a shortage of them. And just like the data we're collecting, that shortage is also growing. So UNC Charlotte has set out to do something about it. They see the value in big data, and the university is bringing together some of the leading minds in the industry to share their outlooks. Joining us to tell us more about that is Dr. Mirsad Hadzikadic, Director of the Complex Systems Institute at the UNC Charlotte College of Computing and Informatics and Executive Director of the Data Science Initiative. Thank you for joining us.
Great to be here, Mike.
Dr. Hadzikadic is in our studio, and with us by phone is David Kiron, Director of the Big Idea. Well, let me put this in reverse order. The Executive Director of the Sloan Management Review and Director of the Big Ideas Initiative at the MIT Sloan School of Management. He joins us by phone. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Now, although we've done a number of programs in the past on big data, let's get an expert definition for those who maybe didn't listen to those programs. What exactly are we talking about?
When people talk about big data, they are mentioning four Vs. They talk about velocity, the speed at which data arrive at us. They talk about the volume, meaning the huge, tremendous amount of data that we generate in every aspect of it. They talk about the variety. They talk about that they come from Facebook and then from cash register and transactions and every way we do with the business. And also about veracity, which is that it's not accurate anymore, everything, that we look at things that sometimes can be questionable and we have to figure out, like on the internet, what it means, really. So big data is a combination of all of those things that suddenly became available because of the computational power that we have and the fact that the chips are everywhere, from sensors to credit cards to anything that we do.
And would it be safe to say that we're learning as we're going and as we're growing in the volume of data that we
are learning, we are modifying, we are adapting to it, we are designing new technologies, we are creating new services, we are defining new aspects of it, we are establishing new definitions even of the concept of big data.
So years ago, when we did a program on big data, if I'm not mistaken, I gave out some figures about how much data we had and how much data is being collected over the course of a given day. And I'm trying to find those figures, but I can't find them now. How much data do we have?
Here's the last comment or fact that I heard, that every 5 years we create more than we did in the last century.
So every 5 years, we have more data than we had in the whole last 100 years?
Yeah, and so it gets worse and worse because every 5 years, we create more than the last century.
Why don't you just stop?
here's the point. When people start planning about 10 years ahead of time, it's like you're planning for 2 centuries. So the speed of life is such an incredible obstacle now to actually understand what is happening.
Now, I remember David Kiron thinking when we talked about this years ago, how could you possibly make sense of the mountains of data that we had then, and now our mountain is 10 times taller, 100 times taller. I would guess the key is to break it down into smaller parts and by asking the right questions of the data. So how easy a task or how hard a task is that?
Yeah, before I answer that, I did want to add on to that the comment that Mirsad was making about the volumes of data. I mean, one way to think about just how significant and humongous the volume of data is that we're now dealing with. You know, we would talk about things like petabytes, exabytes, and now we're talking in terms of the zettabytes and yottabytes. The language that
we're going to run out of descriptors.
We're getting creative.
No, that's exactly the point. The point is that we are going beyond the language that we have to describe the world of data. Mm. And when you go beyond the language, the terms that you use to describe the world that you're operating in, you are at a big turning point.
So as a consumer, and I'm kind of on the fence about this because I've turned off my location services on my phone, which cripples some apps, but I don't care because I don't think Google needs to know where I am at every given moment and keep a record of it. And I'm very circumspect about the apps I use because I know that I'm not paying for most of them, and therefore they are in return collecting information on me.
True.
Should I feel, as a consumer, good about the fact that you guys are struggling to figure this out?
Well, you know what? There is the convenience of all of it is so marvelous that eventually people are going to do it no matter what. So, yes, we are struggling, but at the same time, we are getting better and better. We are creating new technologies. And in business that we are in of education, it is even hard to teach things that change almost on a daily basis.
Hmm. So, David Curon, you point out that data has been described as the new oil, the new soil, the next big thing, and the force behind a new management revolution. Is it really all those things? And if so, how so?
It really is all those. I mean, there is a tremendous. First of all, I mean, just to level set things here. There is a tremendous amount of hype around big data, and there has been a tremendous amount of hype around big data, and that doesn't seem to be going away. But what we've seen in the work that we've done, and we've looked at companies in industries like a variety of industries. And in industries around the world, they are just beginning to tap into what they can do with data, and all of the companies, even though they're not there's a lot of discussion about discussion that we are not the results of the use of data haven't really lived up to the hype. Companies are not actually letting that stop them from pursuing a variety of projects and transforming their business around data. And we see this happening across industries.
So I'm sure that what you just said is going to play into the answer to this next question, but why is it being called the force behind the new management revolution?
So that particular phrasing comes from some work that Eric Brynjolfsson has done, who's the faculty advisor to MIT Sloan Management Review and a very prominent academic researcher here at MIT. And he likens what big data is going to be able to do for business and the public sector in terms of it's a new kind of microscope. We're going to be able to put a skin over the way we look at the world, like from your phone is one type of application of sourcing data, but that goes across. They're putting sensors on trees now. They're on animals. They're on in wildlife preserves in national forests. There's a skin that's being overlaid on business, on the way we work and live, and the kinds of data that's going to come from that is going to give us new insights and new ways of looking at the world.
This sounds like the internet not of things, but the internet of all things, and it sounds a little bit like God. If God knows everything, big data will know everything.
But you know what? I want to add something to the, that's a great point, Ted. I want to add something to David, what David said. For the first time, and it goes back to even the definition of big data, for the first time in the history of the humanity, we have the ability to let the data speak. And what that means is this, even in management or anywhere, we don't have to bring, or sometimes even don't need to bring, consultants or experts to tell us what there might be, what might be the solution to the problem, even what the problem is. But we can actually let the computers now to figure out the hypothesis, what possibly might be wrong, or the reason for the perils that we are having. Once we have the data, the hypotheses, then, and we analyze them, then we can ask the expert to say, do these solutions actually make sense? And the reason why that is important is that we are limited by our experience. We cannot see what we have not experienced. Mm-hmm. We are often surprised. And in the data, there is a trace of our behavior that indicates the possibility of what is happening, what will happen in the future, what has gone wrong. So if we can just trust at least that first step, including the management, people around the consumers, the companies, we could figure out what it is that is really happening, the changes that are happening, but we just don't see them because we don't look for them.
So big data has not lived up to the hype yet. But it promises to, and it promises to if you can get enough talent to understand the questions to ask and how to analyze exactly. The data that you've collected, this mountain of data. What has been done so far? What are there success stories that you can tell that have come from the data analysis that we've been able to do so far from this collection of data?
Well, if you're asking for the in terms of our daily production, companies, industry, then what companies are doing right now, it is just amazing. For example, every time something happens now with my credit card, I get a call. This has not been the case before. Often they would miss it. But now they're getting more, the companies, credit card companies, are getting more and more sophisticated in terms of what possibly might be a fraudulent transaction. Mm-hmm. I think that's happening in the smart cities. If you look at the game of Go, we now have the champion, we have now the machine that can actually beat the human. It is based on the total number of combinations that we can really look at and understand what is happening in the world.
And obviously this could be of great value to companies because it increases your to a certain, we'll talk about this as we go along, but at some point it increases your competitive abilities until the next guy comes along with something at equal or better to what you already have. What does it do for consumers? What does it do for average people? You mentioned the credit card calling right. You to prevent fraud, but what does it do for me?
But look at the health. Let's say personalized medicine. We collect so much data about us, and we will collect even at the physiological level. Eventually, it should be able to even warn me what it is that might potentially be wrong with me. It can come up. We have now the genetic biotechnology data that are being created. There we know so much more about us than we ever did before.
And that's a problem. We know so much more about us than we ever did before. That information is out there in the cloud someplace being collected on us. Should we be more concerned about how that data is being used by business and industry and medicine and insurance and the government, or should we be more concerned about its hackability?
I'm going to start and David can jump in. We should definitely be concerned with privacy issues. We should definitely be concerned with the improper use of the data. And we have to constantly evolve in terms of legal and legislative protections. However, I can guarantee that the utility of availability of the data is going to make it hard to actually prevent
hacking. David, we have about 30 seconds if you want to chime in on that.
Yeah, security, privacy, tremendous issues. There are technology solutions, there are policy solutions for this. If there can be a consumer movement to actually give people the right to use data and to let other people use their own data in proper ways, that's a viable and an appropriate way to go forward.
That's David Curon, executive editor of the Sloan Management Review. Also with us, Dr. Mirsad Hadzikadic, executive director of the Data Science Initiative. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Queen City Audio, Video, and Appliances, purveyors of premium appliances since 1952, including the new Obsidian interior refrigerator from Jennair, designed to showcase food like never before. Details at queencityonline.com. Jennifer Roberts has been Charlotte's mayor for about 100 days. When she took office, she laid out some ambitious initiatives, including the expansion of LGBT protections, and her success in that area has gotten the unwanted attention of the legislature, which is convening a special session today to possibly force a repeal. Mayor Roberts will join us to talk about that, some of her other accomplishments, and about what else is on her to-do list. coming up tomorrow on this program at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, primary results for three states and what the latest delegate math means for both Republicans and Democrats, plus the latest on the investigation into the deadly terror attacks in Belgium.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about big data and the UNC Charlotte initiative to not only make more sense of the vast amounts of data that we're collecting, but also to help this region become a hub for data analysis. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. This is all in advance of an Analytics Frontier conference that the university is sponsoring on Wednesday, March 30th, next week, to talk about the latest updates in the use of technology to analyze massive amounts of data generated by consumers and organizations, and it's open to the public, and I'm told that you'll actually understand what they're talking about. At least that's the goal. Dr. Mirsad Hadžikadić is with us. He is the executive director of the Data Science Initiative at UNC Charlotte. David Kiron is joining us by phone, director of the Big Ideas Initiative at the MIT Sloan School of Management and the executive editor of the Sloan Management Review. We've known about the potential, as I've said, for big data for years, and yet companies, organizations are struggling to make sense of it all, to figure out how to use all this, to figure out what questions to ask. What's the biggest stumbling block? I'm not sure which one of you to answer that question. David?
Sure. So there are many stumbling blocks. What we're finding is that companies that are the most challenged when it comes to analytics are struggling along several dimensions. One is the sophistication of the analytics that they are that they actually have in place. They're focused more on things like financial forecasting and basic operational analytics. They use Excel spreadsheets a lot, basic things like that. They don't have a great deal of talent to do new and innovative things with data and analytics. The quality of the data that they have, and this is a big issue, is very low.
What does that mean, quality of the data?
So it turns out that in order to do some of the more sophisticated kinds of analytics, or even some of the more basic kinds of analytics, you have to business intelligence folks and analytics professionals spend a lot of time cleaning the data where the basics, the ones and zeros aren't in the right places, or if you're collecting health information and you have a number of patients and there are five fields that are missing, and multiply that times a billion, you have a number of problems with organizing your data. So just basic information management issues exist.
And David mentioned talent, Doctor. We've known for years that the amount of data coming in is growing exponentially, and yet we don't have sufficient talent. We saw it coming. Why don't we have the talent, the people?
I'm going to answer that question. Let me just add one more thing to the list that David mentioned, okay. and that is what are the obstacles, stumbling blocks? One is the data sharing. Everybody would benefit from exchanging and sharing data. However, corporate practices or competitive pressures are actually not allowing us to do that.
So the same thing that we're finding in the intelligence universe, both in this country and in Europe with the Brussels situation, that these organizations, these crime-fighting organizations, cannot or will not, because of territorial things, share their data. And as the ambassador from France to the United States told me yesterday, the other problem is that the computer systems aren't compatible from country to country. They can't share data. That's what you're talking about on the corporate level.
They can, and they opt not to. For example, we, the university, could help many organizations in town. However, they are really reluctant to do that. We can do it if we get inside within the firewalls of the organization, but they are reluctant to actually share it. Now, you just imagine four or five banks talking to each other about certain aspects of it. They would know their customers much better than they can know just by looking at their own
but
subset of their customers.
If you're Wells Fargo, Bank of America, name some three, four, Citibank.
Right.
If you're those big banks, or any banks for that matter, and you're sharing anything with your competitors, aren't you, if not weakening your competitive position, aren't you leveling the playing field? And why would you want to do that?
Well, but you could do it in the security arena, for example, or hacking computer. And I'm sure that they are talking, and they are talking to the federal government. But even still, if you look at the synthetic population, about the population in Charlotte, they could know more about their own customers by knowing what else those customers are doing.
So when we talk about talent, who are these people and what do they do?
So in terms of UNC Charlotte, we have our data science initiative has a large educational component, both in terms of regular educational programs and executive education. We have two master's programs. One is and they both are professional science master's programs. And the concept came from MIT. It simply means it's not like a regular master's program in that it guarantees that it says you have to have internship component of it. You also have to have industrial advisory board, and you have this emphasis on soft skills, communications leadership. We have two of those programs. One is called Data Science and Business Analytics. It's collaboration between the College of Computing Informatics on one end and the College of Business on the other. And the other one is Health Informatics, which is really has a large health analytics component, collaboration between Computing Informatics on one end and the College of Health and Human Services on the other. Mm-hmm. So what we do is actually we're creating these bridges. We are creating true data scientists. And a true data scientist is somebody who understands both the data science and the domain science, whether it's healthcare or financial services, energy, retail, whatever. So what we do now, we are creating the talent that can start with the business question, help the end user, the business user, ask the right question. Then we go and try to help help them understand where do you find the data, what kind of data. Then you go to figure out what right techniques you need to apply, analytical techniques, in order to understand the data. Then you have to analyze it. Then you understand what it actually says. Then you have to be able to convey that, what you found out, in terms of action items, actionable items for the person to understand.
So here's a question about all of
that. Okay. And I didn't even mention you have to be able to tell the story to the end user about what to do.
So my question is, why don't the businesses know what questions to ask? They need certain information. Why don't they know how to answer the question? And secondly, everything you just said, why does that require people? Why can't a computer do all of that and just spit it out?
Yeah, the storytelling part is really hard, and the computers don't know what is cost-effective. Yeah, that is true. we think, then we'll see what the future actually tells us. But also, you don't know the politics. You don't know what is possible, what is doable. You don't know all the legislative frameworks and so on. But why is it that the end user does not know all of that? The fact is that if you are a business, let's say you are a market expert or you are running the bank, but you don't know what techniques, what technology can do for you. So sometimes you can ask a question that the data cannot answer because there is no data or there is no technique that actually can do it for you. So it is good to know what is possible in order to understand the question of the data to get the answer to the problem that you're having.
We talked a moment ago about competitors being a little reluctant to share information. And David Curon, you say that the competitive advantage of analytics is waning. Why?
Well, there are a couple of reasons for that. One is just to give you a sense of what we've observed over the past 5 years, we've been asking companies around the world whether or not they're getting a competitive advantage from analytics. And from 2011 to 2013, it went up, and now it's gone down. And it's gone down from a high of like 66% of the companies that we've been surveying down to a little over 50%. The reason what we found, and we asked people of those people who haven't been getting a competitive advantage, you know, why? And the number one answer is they feel like they're just beginning to get value from analytics. And getting value from analytics is a far cry from getting a competitive advantage from analytics. You can create business value, some business value, but that doesn't mean, like, from a strategic point of view, you're actually getting a lot of an advantage in your marketplace. So that's the number one reason. But another reason is a reason that Mersad has been touching on a couple times, which is that other people are catching up. There's a commodification of analytics. We see this in the banking sector, where a number of executives that we've talked to have said, "Look, analytics used to be a competitive advantage, and now now it's not. Everybody else is doing the same kinds of things that we're doing, so it's becoming more like table stakes." And a contributing factor there is the migration of talent from one company to another.
Let me ask, from a complete ignoramus layman's point of view here, as companies learn more about how to do these things and as the talent comes on board to help them do these things, and as we understand how to use all this data and more data continually comes in and companies get better at it, it seems to me that there will always be companies who are better at it than others. But at some point, for the vast majority of companies, although the table may have risen on legs, the playing field is fairly level. So are you better off than you were before big data if everybody's on the same level?
Well, we should be able to. This is like almost like evolution. We are all getting better and better. But there's also, it just opens up new possibilities. So this is really a new science. This is a new world. And we are just trying to figure out how to live in this world. The companies actually are doing mostly of the 2Ds of big data, which is really, let's understand what happened, descriptive. Let's understand what happened in the past. And sometimes it is also, let's diagnose the problem, why certain things happened the way they did. But very few of them are taking advantage of the prescriptive or predictive element of it, meaning what's going to happen in the future, or if I wanted to create a future of a certain kind, what can I do to help me get there? We will all get better, but there will be new techniques. We will get new data that's going to be collected that we never had before. So the world is getting better, more fit, and we are actually trying to find our place in it.
And Dr. Hadjikadzic, you said that we collect anything and everything, but we don't know what to do with it. Could we be collecting too much? Are we collecting unnecessary information? And if so, when will we realize that? When will we see, well, we don't need to know that?
We are absolutely collecting more than we need, but at some point, you're saying, I don't know what I will need, and I might need it at some point. Right now, we are using probably very small percentage of what we collect, but we are collecting just out of fear that something we don't get the right thing. But I'm going to say we don't even collect the right thing. For example, in my area of complex systems, the most important thing is interactions among people. And we don't collect that, or among entities. We collect transactions, but not interactions. So, for example, we're trying to work with one of the schools in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg school system to understand the performance of students. And I asked them, do you collect information about who's sitting next to whom? Do we know if that has any influence on who performs better and how to improve outcomes? And maybe just the geography of classrooms is an important thing to figure out how do we distribute students.
How would you write that down? How would you
– Yeah.
What descriptor would you use to describe who's sitting next to whom?
Well, you do it just once. For example, you probably – in elementary school, the students always sit in the same seat. So you do it once a semester.
Yeah, but how would you do it? I'm sitting across the table from you.
Right.
What would you
right.
say about the two of us?
Yeah, that's what formatted or structured databases are. They basically, there's a field that says, who is your neighbor? You put a name. There are so many studies that actually, just because Framingham studies, there was a first study that was about heart, 20 plus years ago collected. But there was one question to know, who are your friends or colleagues or whatever, that enabled 20 years later a study on the obesity to be done by knowing who joined. When somebody joins a group, does that group become more overweight than before or less? Meaning, what is the influence of that one person who joined the group? Those are the interactions that I'm talking about.
This is illustrative, David, I think, of the problem we've been talking about for the last 30 minutes, and that is what questions do you ask? But more importantly, how do you classify things so that computers and other human beings can understand the information that you've got? This seems, I don't even have an adjective for how complex it is.
So let me sort of back into that, an answer to that question. And try to integrate some of the things we've been talking about with talent and some of the organizational challenges that companies face. When you get, we talk to, and this is a very, this is a real example. We talked to a data scientist who was a new hire at a well-known consumer products company that makes cereals, among other things.
Okay.
And his job was to figure out what can be done with the data they had to better understand consumer interests and innovate their product offerings. And so one of the first things he did was go around to different departments and ask, you know, what data do you have? Because that's an important, taking a data inventory can be an important first step for some organizations just in terms of understanding what data they have in order to manage it. Well, it turns out that when you go in from when somebody who's new comes in to a department that's been in existence for some time with employees who have been there for some time, and this person comes in and says, Tell me what you've done and how you've organized your data and why you've done it this way rather than this other way, they can feel very threatened.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some real political, almost soap opera-like things that can happen in that context. And if you don't have the executive support behind those kinds of data integration efforts, and we can talk about in terms of collaboration and data sharing from one department to another. But if you don't have those structures in place, you can't get the data governance, you can't get the data inventory done properly. And that wouldn't, so that's a significant challenge for companies, and having just the talent to come. So the way this connects to your question about sort of how do you ask the right questions, well, part of that depends on having the data at hand in order to ask the questions of, and developing strong relationships between these talented data scientists and business is a key part of figuring out what questions to ask.
It also seems to me, as you've been talking about this, that this whole idea of having access to this data is threatening to a lot of people, both executives at the upper levels and in middle management, because they've been doing a lot of these decisions that they've been making by gut-level feel or perhaps the wrong data. And suddenly they have this mass of accurate data, and it threatens all of their assumptions, makes them look bad. Is that a problem?
Well, you know what? That is a problem. It is not a problem, but it is perceived as a problem. Mm-hmm. But also what this access to data is enabling us to do is to democratize the decision-making process. So now almost everybody can have access to any level and volume of data from bottom up. And so the creativity is an important element that it enables.
I'm going to talk about, when we come back from the break, why UNC Charlotte continues to be so bullish on this. And its idea to make this a region of data analytics, one of the major regions for data analytics in the country. When we come back, it's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Leading Results, providing B2B companies with marketing strategy and services for website development, lead generation, and inbound marketing in the greater Charlotte area. Details at leadingresults.com/WFAE. Guest host Catherine Lamford and guest will talk about primary results for three states and what the latest delegate math means for both Republicans and Democrats. That's coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Reeves Show, plus the latest on the investigation into the deadly terror attacks in Belgium. We're talking about big data this morning, and if you'd like to join that conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or reach us at WFAE on Facebook or Charlotte Talks on Twitter. We're coming right back.
At All Things Considered, we don't just bring you the day's news. We interview actors, musicians, and artists of all stripes and take the time to understand what really drives them. I'm Audie Cornish. Stop by for your daily dose of discovery every afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Hear the latest news from NPR plus WFAE news updates from the Charlotte region on All Things Considered weekdays from 4 to 6:30 p.m. on WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about big data in advance of a big data conference coming up on March 30th at UNC Charlotte, which people are invited to come to. We'll talk a little bit in a second about what that's all about. And you can find information about that on our website at WFAE.org. Joining us is Dr. Mirsad Hadzikadic, who is the Executive Director of the Data Science Initiative at UNC Charlotte, and David Kiron, Director of the Big Ideas Initiative at MIT and Executive Editor of the Sloan Management Review. UNC Charlotte has been bullish on the whole idea of big data for years. We've talked about this before with UNC Charlotte folks. You want this region to become a hub for data analytics. Why do you want that? Why is that important to Charlotte, to the university, to you guys?
Right. Because we know it is part of the future. It can help us get to a better future for the university, for the region. We're going to collect even more data than we have been collecting thus far. Digital aspect of our lives is getting more important. There's going to be a convergence of the analog and digital life in the future. You cannot simply avoid it. There is no option than to be part of it.
And how will that change life?
Just look at your life right now. It is so much more convenient. I know you said you turned off the location services of your apps, but you still are using many apps. And right now, just imagine wherever you are, any information you need at any point, just look at your phone and it's right there.
Right.
Has never happened before. The amount of knowledge available to us is staggering, and it is just our choice whether we are willing to look at it or not.
But if we are jockeying for position to become the data analytics center of the country or one of them, there are other cities doing exactly the same thing at exactly the same time. What gives us an advantage over those other cities?
But we have a tremendous...
Or do we have one?
Well, we are trying to create one. North Carolina as a state has decided to invest. For example, there's this game-changing research initiative that UNC Charlotte is part of, and we are actually leading a project together with NC State and RENCI from Chapel Hill, where we are trying to make sure that there is an environment in which all of us can share data through a certain platform. So we are leading that effort, and eventually anybody can join, any university, even any institution, any industry. Mm-hmm. We're trying to create the possibility where we create this tremendous data resource that can, and analytical resource that anybody can benefit from, thus putting us probably in the top 2 or 3 states that have a statewide effort.
Well, according to an article in the Business Journal, the Charlotte Business Journal, this region is, and I quote here, incredibly weak in analytics. At the moment, we aren't yet producing or attracting the employees base needed to compete with emerging centers like Boston, New York, Atlanta, and Raleigh. That was an article written in 2014. I don't know whether you agree with that or not, but have things changed in the last 2 years?
I think that things have changed tremendously. We've produced, by the end of the spring, we're going to produce 40 and data scientists, and we will have produced by May 50 health analysts, health informaticians. We have tremendous, I'm talking about UNC Charlotte, tremendous research effort. We are leading the state in so many different ways. It's a top initiative for UNC Charlotte. The ecosystem in terms of analytics is growing in the region, and this conference actually is going to talk about that. We're going to, in addition to wonderful David Kiron and Tom Davenport, who are going to be the keynotes, and as they did 3 years ago. But this time, we're going to have wonderful panel sessions and 12 parallel sessions where we will bring people from industry and the university to talk about issues like energy, smart cities, financial services, healthcare, retail, social good. For every session, there will be a person from industry as well as from the university. Mm. And we think this is going to be the beginning of a dialogue. We're trying to establish the regular discussions about analytics so that people understand that there is no way out. We have to be part of it. We have to lead actually. I know
it's coming whether we want it or not, whether we care about it or not, we might as well be on the forefront of the tidal wave. You just said social good. Let's talk about that for a second, because usually when we talk about big data, people are concerned about hacking. They're concerned about privacy. Right. They're concerned about the Big Brother, whether the Big Brother is the government or Big Brother is Procter & Gamble. They're concerned about it. And you think that social good is one of the things that can come out of the proper analytics and collection of this big data. You're interested in the areas of education, economic opportunity, fairness, and justice.
Right.
I've never heard that in the context of big data. So talk about that.
Well, it is something that I am personally passionate about. It is going to be one of the three areas of interest, focus, research areas for the science initiative. And here's what it's about. There are many students, and I love our students for this. They are driven not only by money, and many of them are driven by money, but to a certain extent. But they care more about the cause, the reason. How do you do something meaningful with it? And in this particular context, when you look at the region, let's say this region, there are so many needs, but we don't collect information all the time. And if we do collect information, we don't do much about it. There are so many corporations that are willing to collaborate, to cooperate with each other and share data and invest in helping the community, the region. And we are basically saying we are willing to put our resources into this area, work with the community on data collection, understanding what the best steps could be taken based on the data to address the issue, and then follow up and see whether that actually happened.
What areas of social justice and social good could benefit from this?
Right.
How would it work?
I tried to figure that out, and I talked to the Foundation of the Carolinas, talked to the City of Charlotte Mecklenburg School System, our Social Capital Institute, and it seems that education is on everybody's mind. How do we, first, access to education, but then performance in schools. Second, economic opportunity. How do we make sure that everybody has equal access to economic opportunity? But you said justice and fairness. I have a PhD student who is working at UNC. Charlotte has this initiative on I Love Charlotte and Happiness. It turns out that fairness and justice are one of the key element of degree of happiness. Now, the money, people say money doesn't make you happy. Well, there was one study, it was on NPR, that basically said that, yeah, but to a certain extent, there are countries like Norway where having more money actually means more happiness, but only if that additional revenue, the additional money, distribution of the money is perceived to be just, done justly and fairly, then people are happier and they contribute more to the conditions in the region. Also the crime, for example, the neighborhoods, the prosperity of the neighborhoods. All of that I show social good, and I think we should, our students are ready, our professors are ready, we are ready to put our resources behind it.
And it will take, I would think, collaborative efforts on the parts of universities and government organizations, because NGOs and right. a lot of social service organizations do not have the money
right.
to afford the talent or even the computer power that's required
right.
to do all this.
And we are ready to make that investment, and we are actually prepared to establish something what I call a partnership for social good. We would like to lead it, but we need everybody else, the industry, NGOs, the government.
Where are you in that process?
The very beginning.
Okay. What does it take?
It takes the vision. Somebody has to articulate it, and we are starting that. And we have started initially conversations. And I have to tell you, everybody we talked to said it's a great idea. We had two board meetings for our DSB and health informatics programs. That was the most active discussion that we ever had with our industry representatives, who basically said, great idea, great ideas. Our companies will participate. We personally would like to participate. So we are at that stage. We are putting together the teams of students and faculty who will work on it, but we are now at the process of identifying the priorities for the region. For that, we need help.
So in that area, we're in infancy. In the area of analyzing big data and understanding how to deal with all the information that we're collecting, we're probably in our infancy, probably a little further progressed than your social justice initiative is at the moment. But it's going to come. It's going to be a tidal wave, a tsunami, whatever you want to call it. How, David, will this change the workforce? What will it mean for what jobs will be and what workforce, what jobs will look like in the later 21st century?
Oh, that's a really Big question. So there are a couple aspects of that. One is we could very well be looking at a more data-informed employee base. It could be that as productivity, and so this is a somewhat big idea and perhaps controversial, but a lot of economists are beginning to talk about this, is that when we become more productive as a society, we may come to rely less on people and more on machines and who are going to be augmenting what any individual can do. If we actually get our education system right and we really educate a lot more people at the collegiate level, we could be facing a situation where we have more well-educated people that we have jobs for, where the jobs would match those well-educated people. And we could, in terms of a larger social good that could come from that, is that we may wind up exporting a lot of our well-educated workforce to other countries where there are needs for that.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because it seems to me that everything we're talking about here, through algorithms and other things that I don't know anything about, all this could be done by machine. And we talked to, I've forgotten the individual's name now, but not too long ago we had somebody on here who essentially says that we're looking at the end of jobs. Everything that we currently do as a human being will be done by a machine who will do it better, faster, smarter, and never take a day off. And they'll do it 24/7.
That's a long way away if it ever is going to happen.
Okay.
What we're finding is that data and analytics are...
That was Marshall Brain from NC State University. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
All right. With all due deference to Marshall Brain from NC State University. It's a long way away, and I think it's fine to talk about future scenarios of that sort, and I just did myself. So, what we're finding is that the blending of experience and analytics is really the hot spot right now for what needs to happen with all this education and talent that's coming out with data. How do you actually blend properly people's experience with their data? Because with the challenged organizations that we find, you have executives who are actually threatened by data and analytics, which come up with decision approaches that are counter to their intuitions. And if you're in an organizational setting where your value to the organization is determined by your experience, and something else comes in like analytical techniques that provide answers that you can't you won't be able to come up with your own experience, then it's a very threatening thing. Mm. I forget where we are.
That's okay. Yeah. Now, let me jump in here with another question, and that would be, what should young people who are seeing this eventual world change, this mammoth shift in everything coming, what should they do to prepare for it?
Well, I have to tell you, to connect the two questions, there's no way we can predict anything. Mm. I can predict one thing, that is that we cannot predict anything. The world constantly surprises us. Technology is always different. Facebook started as a college-grade communication system, and now look what it is. Twitter started as one thing, and now it's a major source of news. What the young people can do actually to prepare them for the unknown future. And I think innovation and creativity are going to be a big part of it.
But young people, you're looking for talent
right.
in your area of expertise. And that's one of the problems. We have a shortage of talent. So young people go into college and they think, well, this is going to be a good thing to do. I'll go take courses from Dr. Hadjikadic.
Right.
And they do.
And they should.
Okay. But in 4 to 6 years,
right.
or 10 years or 15 years, suddenly these jobs right. are outsourced to India, or these jobs become something that a computer can do? Can we plan for that happening? Or is this a good idea to get – can you recruit talent for something that may not exist in 10 or 15 years?
Well, it's true that some of those jobs will go to India, but look at our classrooms. There are also a lot of Indian students in our classrooms here. So at the same time, we can – we know that computers will be part of our future. Mm-hmm. Digital technology will be part of it. We might as well master it. Now, I keep saying thinking differently is what we need to teach them. Yeah, there will be products that will go away, but new products will be created. New opportunities will be established. It will be fine.
Even as the two of you and many, many, many others are working on big data, some experts I read about yesterday are predicting that fast data and actionable data will replace big data. The theory is that businesses don't use a fraction of the information they collect, so the focus should be on asking the right questions and making use of whatever data you have right now. What's your take on that, very quickly?
Well, I'm going to go quickly. I know David has more to say on this. It is true that we have to deal with real-time data. As the data arrives, we have to make decisions. That's the fast data. It is also true that it has to be actionable. It doesn't matter if you give me a list of 15 things that I cannot do anything about. So actionable should be there. But that has nothing to do with big data, replacing big data. It's making it more useful.
So, David, we have about 30 seconds.
Okay, there are different kinds of data. The value of these different kinds of data vary from setting to setting. Fast-time, real-time data can be crucial in some instances and less relevant in other kinds of situations. What's most important is that you pair, make sure that you have the right data talent working with the right business people to come up with the best questions so you can come up with the best decisions.
David Kiron is executive editor of the Sloan Management Review and director of the Big Ideas Initiative at MIT Sloan School of Management. He'll be the keynote speaker at an upcoming conference on this at UNC Charlotte on March 30th. Dr. Mirsad Hadzikadic is the executive director of the Data Science Initiative and director of Complex Systems Initiative in the College of Computing and Informatics at UNC Charlotte.